Blog Talk Radio.
Laughing Eyes Kennel presents The Gypsy Musher with Iditarod and Yukon Quest veteran Hugh Neff. The Gypsy Musher will share stories from the trail, fortune-telling, and memories of mushing years past. Follow The Gypsy Musher on Twitter and visit our website at gypsymusher.com.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, and sitting by my side is the Gypsy Musher, Hugh Neff. A rare event, a live show, right in person. Hugh, how's it going?
Oh, it's great to be here. Just drove down from Tok. It's about a five-hour drive to get here. Saw lots of wind, not too much snow. Makes me appreciate Tok more, being down here, to tell you the truth, because you guys are hurting for the snow this year, it looks like.
We are. We don't have much snow at all here down here in the valley. It makes training for some of the longer races a little difficult. We're going to talk a little bit about the top of the world and also training up some rookies here a little bit. But before we do, tell us where we're at. A good friend of ours, Dave Shear, we're at his place tonight. One of our good friends and also a very hospitable person, at least for you, isn't he?
Oh, he's one of my angels, you know. I've got a few of them littered around Alaska, and Dave's probably one of the guys that's helped me out the most, just giving me a place to set up camp when I'm before I did a ride or if I'm passing through town. It'll help me get to the airport. Obviously, I'm going to be flying here tonight. I'm going to Rapid City, South Dakota to do a bunch of talks this week. Not only around Rapid City, but I'll be doing some talks in some of the reservations near Pine Ridge. So Dave's been kind enough to take me to the airport. It doesn't hurt that his girlfriend lives a few minutes away from the airport. But, yeah, Dave's the man, you know. Not only has he done well in the quest and Iditarod, you know, but his line of dogs has been used by many of us. Myself, Timmy Osmar, Lance Mackey, you know. Just because, you know, you hear a lot of famous mushers that win races, there's a lot of great dog mushers that people don't even really know who they are, and maybe it's because they want to keep it that way, but Dave's definitely one of the best dog people I know, that's for sure.
You know, even some of my dogs have some of Dave Shear lines in them, so that's pretty interesting. He's been out of mushing for quite a few years, and he still has a lot of good dog lines out there, even from way back. You know, Dave's going to join us here on the show in a few minutes, and we told him he was going to be on, but he had to get ready for the show. So I think he thinks it might be on video, but he doesn't quite know it's radio. So he had to get gussied up a little bit before he joins us. He took a shower and all that before he comes on.
Yeah. He just got done painting. So, you know, he's one of the typical Alaska guy, you know, every day that you just have to do something. That's the beauty of Alaska and living out in the wilderness, you know. It's every day you have to do something. You have to be productive just to feel good about life. And I think it's a great metaphor for everybody around the world to see how we live here. People back in the day used to think that we're a little bit goofy living up here, but you see with reality TV and how Alaska sparked the imagination of people throughout the world that people in Alaska live life to the hilt, you know. There's a reason we live up here, because cities are a little confining for us. We like to be out there where we can roam a little bit wilder.
And we do that all year long. It's not something like the bears. We don't hibernate in the winter. That's pretty much our busiest time, at least in the mushing world. That's when we do most of our activity is in the wintertime.
And you're not making fun of my Chicago Bears here, are you?
Not yet. But I understand that you are heading to Chicago, and we're going to talk about that in just a second. You're having a Yukon Quest celebration party in a couple of weeks.
Not only about, you know, what I pulled off last year, but just celebrating the race, you know, more than individual musher accomplishments. I think we as mushers have to just honor the sport and these races that so many people put time and energy and volunteer, you know, their off hours setting up these events. And it's a way for us to show off the great land. And I'm looking forward to seeing friends and family back in Chicago and hopefully catching the game, too, if I can.
So tell us about that event, your Yukon Quest party. I know it's going to be over the Thanksgiving holiday weekend. Tell us when, where, and how people get involved.
That's at Barnaby's Restaurant Niles, my buddy from Illinois, from State of Zion. Pete Canwisher is helping to set it up. And it's on the 24th, 5 o'clock. You can just contact me if you need info how to get there and all that. Or else just check out our link on Facebook. But it's going to be a fun event. Going to have some videos going, bringing lots of souvenirs, shirts and hats and stuff like that. And it's going to be a fun time.
You know, we're getting ready to go into the 2012-2013 mushing season, and this past 6-7 months, you've kind of lived the life of a UConn Quest champion. Now it's time to defend that a little bit. Coming into the next few months, the Quest is about 4 months away now. How has it been for you over the last 6-7 months as that UConn Quest champion, and how has your life changed a little bit over those 6 months?
I think it probably might mystify some of the people involved with the UConn Quest how much I've been out there promoting this race, but it's my heart. It's what I believe in, and I'm not doing this for myself. I go to Germany, Australia, and I ain't talking about UNF. I'm talking about the UConn Quest. And, you know, the Iditarod's great, too, and I respect that race, but considering what I've been through with the Quest, it sort of stole my soul, shall we say, and I'll always be a Quest musher more than anything.
So how does the 2013 UConn Quest look for you here? I know it's real early to speculate. I know you have some miraculous dogs, but what are you doing differently this year, if anything, for defending that title?
Yeah, first of all, even though I won last year, my favorite Quest was actually 3 years ago when we had 22 out of 23 teams finish the race. I was so happy. I mean, that to me was a successful race when you get that many teams finishing. As far as training goes, you know, I've got nice solid veterans that don't need as much of the day-to-day training, but those rookies were running all the time. The beauty of where I live is, you know, I got the Taylor Highway, so it's really easy to train dogs there. Not just the snow conditions, which aren't amazing, but they're decent. You're not going to rip up your runner plastic where you might on other places in Alaska right about now. But just the hills, I can have a team that's in a nice, steady momentum as one solid team. That's what I'm always training for. Back in the day, I always wanted to have the best dogs and just learning from guys like Joe Garney and Lance and other folks. So it's about the best team, not the best dogs. And this time of year, every musher in Alaska is going to be telling everybody, oh, I got the best dogs this time. And, you know, that's the beauty of been doing, you know, over 20,000 milers now. And there are so many great dog teams all over the world, really. So I give it up to everybody. It's going to be a great race. We got, you know, Lance, Berkowitz, Brent Sass, obviously the favorite's got to be Alan Moore. I think a lot of people think he should have won the race last year. I consider him to be people probably wouldn't understand it in this day and age, but I think he won that race as much as I did. And I just think, for me, some mushers are scientific about dog mushing, and for me it's about the spirit, it's about the heart. And I just think that I had Geronimo, his spirit was with me last year. And it's about that.
You know, that's always a great story, the difference between the spirit and the science of mushing. You know, people write books about both of them.
Mm-hmm.
And it truly is, at least in my opinion as well, I think there's a lot of spirit in mushing, and that's what makes it important, at least to me, and I know it does to you. But a lot of folks think about it the other way. They're very technical when they come to mushing. You know, Jeff King to be one name in particular. He designs equipment and things for particular races, whereas you are a little bit different animal, aren't you? You don't care really what equipment you have as long as you get to the starting line. But I know you have a very cool sled
that we
just picked up last week. Tell us a little bit about that. I understand it drives like a dream.
Well, for me, I've got a nice sled, you know, that Hans Gott makes, but they're not wooden. And Cody Strafe, you know, Dog Paddle Design, makes nice, solid, old-school sleds. And I've always wanted to be an old-school musher. And when we talk about, you know, me being different, my goal has never been – I was actually sort of a little bit bummed out to win a race. I wanted to be like the – I always wanted to be this great musher that never won. I wanted to be the guy that's in the top five for every race.
Kind of like the Buffalo Bills.
Oh, don't get fan man. You know, I think you can prove a lot more over your lifetime than you can in one or two or three races. And so I want to be that Joe Reddington or that Jim Lanier that's doing it when they're in their 70s. For me, that's my greatest goal. And it's tough to do, man, because I'm just turned 45, and Lester Earhart always used to warn me about, you'll see when you hit your 40s, your body's going to start messing with you. And my shoulder hurts. I had an interesting little encounter with a dog team dragging me down the trail here a couple days ago. So my ankle's a little tweaked, and it's all about, you know, learning how to rehab your body. And that's where, you know, having a sauna comes in. A lot of the most healthy people I've seen at an older age are all folks that have saunas or some form of, you know, healing their body. But it wasn't my fault. I didn't wipe out on the sled. My handler nailed a tree. Thankfully, I'm in front of the team. And so when he hits the tree, the gangline busts off the sled. And he's sitting there with a sled. I'm down the trail in front of him, and all of a sudden the dog keeps flying down the trail. Fortunately, the snow hook was still hooked to the gang line. So it was only an eight-dog team, and fortunately Walter was in lead. So I jumped into the team, grabbed the gang line, was doing my Indiana Jones, getting pulled down the trail, and just going, come on, Walter, come on, mellow. And by that time, Nick, my handler, ran up and grabbed the snow hook, and we put it back in the team, or in the ground. He ran back, grabbed the sled, we got some rope out, we redid all the rigging, it's all solid, and I said, have a good day, Nick, and he carried on his way.
Always blame the handler.
Oh, no, I'm a professional handler, you know. People like to rib me about talking about handlers, but they don't realize that I've probably handled for more mushers than anybody in quite a long time. I mean, my first year, I was handling for three different mushers all at the same time.
Wow.
Taking care of 250 dogs a day, Curzer, Hurt, Ray Brooks, and Bill Mitchell, and I loved it. It was a lot of work, but, you know, when I look for a handler, if they start talking about how much they're getting paid or can they race, it's not what I want. I want a handler that just wants to be out there with the dogs, and I've got one of the best handlers now, and Nicole's great to have, too, and those guys are going to be running dogs while I'm traveling, but you have to love what you're doing. You can't be doing it because you're trying to make a certain amount of money per hour. That's not what dog motion's about.
Right, and a lot of handlers, they understand that coming in. They know they aren't going to get paid much, if anything. They know they're going to get room and board and the possibility of running a dog team, and that's what a lot of these guys come up here for. And a lot of them, yeah, the dream. A lot of them become pretty good mushers. You in particular, like you said, you started out being one of those rookie guys, wet behind the ears, so to speak, and here you are training up a new batch of mushers.
Well, I lucked out, man. When I came here, I didn't know who the Earharts were or Gareth Wright. And all of a sudden, I'm working for like one of the main sprint mushing families in Alaska. So I started off as a sprint musher, totally different from long distance. Most sprint mushers make fun of long distance mushers.
Oh, yeah.
We don't know what we're doing. Then again, I probably do more miles in a week than most sprint mushers do in a month.
Right, right.
So it's all how you look at life, really.
So we were talking about training up for the upcoming long distance races, Yukon Quest, Iditarod, that sort of thing. And the first race that you're going to be in is, of course, your dogs in the Top of the World. We've talked a lot about that race, the Top of the World 350. You have a team entered into that race with Nicole.
Yeah.
So tell us about that. How are you prepping for that? I know you post a lot of stuff on Facebook about what you're doing now. You're doing some 50-mile runs up the same trail. The same road, which is the Taylor Highway there, that we're going to be running on for that race. Tell us how you're prepping your teams now for that race the day after Christmas.
I think I've been contacted by five or six top 20 I did or had this musher this week asking, hey, man, how's the snow up there and blah, blah, blah. I'm sort of getting a feeling that there might be a couple people heading up to Tok, which I wouldn't necessarily advocate. I don't think people really know that I'm one that sort of knows how to control a dog team without needing a snow hook. Gareth Wright used to tell me stories about back in the day in the 50s and 60s, he used to take girls to the movie theater in Fairbanks, six dog, maybe eight dog team, park the team outside the movie theater, go in and watch the movie, and they didn't use snow hooks back then.
Wow, so, and the dogs would just stay there.
Well, it's all about training, man, and, you know, Gareth Wright's one of the greatest. It was an honor just to watch that man and what he did. Came by every day, and he actually trained his leaders with hand signals.
Mm.
So pretty amazing dude. A lot of our dogs, everybody's dogs in Alaska can be traced to him in one way or another. Anyhow, you know, a lot of my training, you know, has to do with stopping dogs on hills. Maybe if I see some deep snow, I'll GM off into the snow and put the sled on the side. I'm always carrying a lot of weight in the sled. I don't believe in training dogs for speed. I think that power creates speed. So I'm always on my help and people that are running my team about, hey, I don't want you out there flying like I used to back in the day. Make those dogs learn how to pull. Don't be in a rush. The beauty of what we're doing, though, is the hills are monstrous on the Taylor. And I'm not, you know, an Iditarod musher running 16 or 20 dogs out there. I'm running 12. And not only does it teach the dogs to get a nice, solid pace going, but I'm behind that sled trying to lose some weight myself. You know, I've had fun this summer, so I need to get in shape myself. And out of the dog yard, I'm only running 8-10 dogs. And I think it's not only safer for the dogs in training, but I think you're going to have a lot healthier team in the long run.
You know, your race, the Top of the World 350, has gotten a lot of interest, and quite a few of the who's who of mushing are going to be in that. Names like King and Mackey and Sass, and of course some of the other big boys.
Well, my hero, Sonny Linder, is not only going to be in the race, but he actually volunteered to put the trail in with his groomer. So
cool.
You know, he's probably out of all the the mushers that I respect, he's number one on the list because he's the real deal. He's the real McCoy, and type of guy gets up on stage at these banquets, he doesn't want to talk to the crowd. That's why he's not like me, a big blowhard. He's more into just being with the dogs and doing his thing. So I congrats to Sonny for doing this for us. It's a big deal that he's doing.
And he was one of the last mushers to sign up, wasn't he? In the field, 35 field.
Yeah, and the amazing thing is a lot of folks probably don't realize this, but the name of his kennel is Johnson River Kennels, and Johnson River is right outside of Toke. In between Token Delta Junction, and he used to train on the Taylor Highway back in the day, in his day. Original Quest winner, finished with every dog he started with, which I believe is just 10 dogs. Mr. King, Jeff's coming, and, you know, he was an original Quest musher. So to have guys like that, as well as, you know, the native folk that are going to be doing the race, as well as, you know, a lot of the including yourself, rookie mushers who are looking to challenge themselves. We got a great mix of mushers, and there still is one spot available.
Oh.
So hopefully.
TopTheWorld350.com if you're interested. I think it's still only $200, is it not?
Yeah, and this race is definitely more old school. It's not about prize money. It's about the race is the prize. And there's going to be a lot of beautiful native gifts and a lot of businesses that come on board to sponsor. We're not looking for big sponsors. We're just looking for a business to donate whatever. You know?
Donate airtime and all that. You have a lot of...
Oh, yeah. 40-mile airs, donating a free charter flight for helping to haul stuff. That's been the biggest issue with this race, obviously, is hauling gear out to Chicken and Toke, and as well as hauling drop dogs.
So prep for this race is a lot like prepping for that Iditarod in terms of drop bags and shipments and all that, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. For the mushers, for me, I get to see from a different angle because I'm the one who's having to haul all the straw to the checkpoints and a lot of the drop bags. So I get to see what Mr. Jack Niggermeyer used to do and Mr. Northern has to deal with every year. So I give those guys even more respect now for all the stuff. And I'm sure I haven't gotten to the part that they probably don't care for the most, and that's all the handler questions, the musher questions.
Oh.
I have a feeling a lot of these mushers are going to maybe stick it to me a bit about, you know, maybe the trail was tougher than they thought, but, you know, that's why we've been telling them, you know, be prepared.
We've been talking about this on this show since August. So
yeah.
If they aren't prepared now, they got another thing coming.
Yeah, it's all hills, and, you know, guys like Jeff, you know, he lives on the Denali Highway, so he knows what it's all about, and Lance and Brent and everybody, but it's going to be one of those races where everybody, by the time they get back to Toke, is going to be tired.
So, you were talking about natives and the native culture, especially in that Top of the World 350 race. But here, this coming week, you're heading to the native land of the Lower 48, Pine Ridge Reservation, and areas around Rapid City, South Dakota. I know you went there right around this time last year, right around Christmas, mm-hmm. to do some talks at some schools. But this is a little bit different. What are you doing this time?
Well, Amanda Price, she's my angel from Rapid City. She set this up for me, and I told her last year that I really wanted to come back and do some talks in the reservation. So I'm doing some talks in some places around Pine Ridge. And one of my neighbors, Pat Case, who's involved with the Yukon Quest, he's from down in Cheyenne River area. So a lot of history, you know, good and bad of that area. But, you know, the name of my team last year is Walters Warriors, and growing up, Boy Scouts, we had a special organization called the Order of the Arrow, which is where scouts would have to spend a night out in the woods by themselves to learn how to live off the land. And that's how I think a lot of people around the world, why they seek to learn more about natives and why they respect them so much is how Native people have such a intuitive touch with the environment. And it's an honor for me. It's going to be a big moment in my life. I've done a lot of traveling this year, but this is definitely one tour that I'm really a little bit nervous about, but really looking forward to as well.
So is this going to be your same typical motivational type talk that you do at a lot of schools throughout the country, or is this going to be a little different for you?
No, it's going to be different. I'm going to, you know, talk about what it's been like living. You know, I've lived in half a dozen Native villages in Alaska, Tanana. Spent a lot of time in Minto, Manly Hot Springs. You know, lived in Nanana, and have friends throughout Alaska. A lot of friends in Fort Yukon, a lot of Gwich'in. And I'm just going to talk about, you know, it's tough because, you know, it's a tough, you know, economy everywhere, but you know, the Natives have been had some real tough times, you know, since the white men's come to America, and I just want to relate to them that, you know, I ain't rich, and I don't want to be rich, you know. I don't have any money in my name now, but I'm planning on doing a lot of racing this year, and for me, wealth is in how you live your life, not in what you put in the bank. And the Natives, I think, have a very healthy way of looking at life and how they see, you know, everything through Mother Nature's eyes. And so I think we all can learn by, you know, reading books, you know, Black Elk, any of the John Nearhart books. Chief Joseph was a big hero of mine. I read a lot of books about him. So I think it behooves all of us to sort of learn not only about Natives in the Lower 48, but in Alaska as well. You know, it's Native Heritage Month, and a lot has been in TV stations, and I have a lot of respect for the Natives because they've done a lot for me.
Let's talk about that for just a second. A little bit off key from mushing, but at least the Native culture. And I know you were down there last year and you experienced a lot of that, and you've experienced a lot in Alaska. What is the big difference between the two? Because there is a marked difference between their culture, especially the Sioux, the Lakota. I know quite a bit about that. And the Athabascans and the Native folks about here. What can you tell our listeners that are the big differences between those two different cultures?
Well, I'd say the Natives up here got a lot more good stuff to hunt.
But back then they did.
Yeah, they still. I mean, up here they got a lot of moose and, you know, caribou, stuff like that. A lot of different variety to trap as well if they do that in the spring. It was amazing. I went to a powwow, and I've been going to powwow since I was in high school. And I'm sort of mesmerized by the power of the drum. That was the interesting thing. I went to the dances last weekend in Fairbanks, the Gwich'in and the Athabascan Fiddler Festival. And they're more rock and roll, country music. And when you get down south, it's a little bit more about the drum and being outdoors and around a campfire, you know, getting at it. So,
the heartbeat of Mother Earth there.
Yeah, and I play that music for the dogs on the trail sometimes.
Well, I do too, all the time.
Yeah.
It's awesome. It's good motivating music as you're.
Gets them in a nice rhythm.
It does.
But I was actually at the powwow, and here I am at a powwow, and I look over on the court, and there's a big, tall African American fella, and it's Bill Russell.
Oh,
from the Boston
right?
Celtics. And Shaquille O'Neal had been there a couple of years before that. So,
wow.
I think all American people throughout the world, when I was over in Europe and Germany, every house I went into, Sioux Kings, Rainier up in Hamburg, and Connie, they all had Native American stuff everywhere. So they're a very honored culture.
They are, and you know, that's what this country was built on, and I think that we need to get back to that a little bit, back to our roots a little bit, you know.
And it's like I was watching studying up a little bit on Netflix, watching a lot of Native movies.
Oh, here we go, yeah.
And it's like one of the Native guys said, you know what, we're all from some tribe back in our history, whether it's in America or over in Europe or Asia or what have you.
Right. You know, we're still waiting for the mysterious Dave Shear. Hopefully he comes and joins us. He's now outside.
Feeding
his dogs. He's no longer
a musher. Not dogs, ducks.
Oh, ducks, yeah. He's no longer a musher. Now he's living the retired life. He's got himself a few ducks, a couple of chickens.
Good realtor.
A good realtor and a heck of an interesting little Labrador star. She makes up for what probably 30 sled dogs will make up on.
Yeah, you've trained a lot of labs. And,
oh, yeah. She's your typical lab.
It's funny because, you know, I started off with labs back in Chicago. Well, we had shepherds when I was a little kid. But then we had labs as I got older, and I think every Labrador owner thinks they're the greatest dog trainer in the world. And they don't realize that labs are like the easiest dogs in the world to train.
They have their issues sometimes. So let's get back to this trip. You're heading down to South Dakota area this coming week, and then you're heading over to Chicago through the Thanksgiving holidays and having your Yukon Quest party. What happens after that? You have about 3 weeks before Christmas then, and then the race season really starts. I know you're doing the Top of the World, the Connect 200 and all that.
I'm doing a lot before that, man. I get home, and I'm on a philosophy of consistent running schedule. So almost every day, doesn't matter. I don't try to go too many runs over 50 unless I'm doing 50 miles, unless I'm doing an overnighter. But I'll probably do a run of chicken. The Quest is having a get-together at Cold Spot Feeds the first weekend in December, and I'm going to be attending that. They're having us wear tuxedos.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
At the feed store?
Yeah.
Oh.
But I asked them if I could wear my kilt instead.
Oh.
So maybe I'll wear that on the bottom and the tux on top. But after that, believe it or not, I'm hoping to organize, talk to Jody Bailey about this, and I'm hoping to organize a few mushers if they're interested. I'm going to take a team and go and do a training run over Eagle Summit, especially after what happened 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. I think it makes a lot of sense, and I would highly advocate any newer mushers or folks that might be a little bit nervous about that, Eagle Summit is something that if your dogs have seen it before, it's going to make it a lot easier once the Quest rolls around.
Right, right. So here we are with the infamous Dave Shear. He's coming over to join us here in just a second. Dave, have a seat. We're at your home, but we're forcing you to be on the spotlight here. So here we are. Here we are with Dave Shear, Iditarod and Yukon Quest musher from back in the day. Dave, introduce yourself to the Gypsy Musher fans. Tell us who you are and what you're all about.
When was your first race? What year?
My first race was in 1984.
What was it?
It was in Montana Creek, the Montana Creek 200.
And how'd you do?
I finished.
Yeah.
That was my qualifying race for the Iditarod.
So they did have qualifiers back then.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
It was just one 200-mile race.
Wow.
So you decided to finish. And what was the biggest shocker for you as far as being out there? Was it tough to stay awake or just take care of the dogs? Or
you mean the 200-mile race?
Yeah. Well, you know, the first 50 miles went no problem. And then the next 50, you know, the dogs were a little more tired. And I had when I look back, I had an undertrained team. And but that was one of the things I learned at the time.
So who was your mentor, like, to learn about dogs from?
When I came to Alaska, I ran into Jan Masek.
North Norwegian?
Well, he was Czechoslovakian. Yeah, he's a...
Never even heard that word.
Yeah, Jan. Yeah, no, he's quite a character. And he had 100 dogs, and...
He was an Iditarodder?
Uh-huh. Yeah, he had started with Malamutes. You know, he had a small team of Malamutes, then he came to Alaska and finally figured out that you have to have Alaskan Huskies. And he got a bunch of dogs, but he needed some help. And so I learned from him, and I realized, you know, that it was something that I wanted to do.
You ended up doing three Iditarods?
Yeah, I took his B team. We had two teams. I had the B team, and I finished with that in 1984. And then I went and gathered up some dogs myself, and put a team together in 1986. And then
those were the dogs you got from Gareth Wright, or
no, those were dogs I collected from other mushers, you know, castaways mostly, and you know, dogs that didn't work in anybody else's team. So that was another lesson I learned. And then what I did was I started thinking about it and what it would take to put together a good kennel, and it's genetics.
Yeah,
it's two-thirds genetics. And I was, trying to take dogs that didn't have the breeding, you know, and try to work with those. But so I went in and I took some money and invested in a few dogs.
Then within 2 years, you had 50 dogs.
Yeah, right. And I took those dogs. So I did some research and understood that some of the better dogs came from the sprint mushers.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the North American.
Which is different now because we really can't
breed their dogs as much because they're running mostly hound dogs.
They're mostly hound dogs now, right. But at the time, they were, you know, George Atlas dogs were from the village, and they were extremely tough dogs.
You look at those old dog team pictures of, from the Fur Rondi and the North American, those would be championship Iditarod teams nowadays.
Yeah, right. They were furrier dogs,
yeah.
You know, and huskies, and but they came from the village, and they only kept the good ones, and so they had taken care of a lot of the selection process right there. So I took dogs that were related to George Atlas dogs, his very good ones, and then and Gareth Wright, too, and then kind of crossed those two and developed a line.
The Shear line.
Exactly.
We all got into it.
Yeah, and then at some point, you know, when I had a litter of puppies, the whole litter would be good. They'd be great dogs, every one of them. So that's one of the parts that I liked about breeding with good genetics is you have a higher success, I think.
So you've seen this race for, what, 30 years now? I did around the
Glen. Yeah, I guess so, you know.
How has it changed, do you think, the most dramatically? Better trails? Or?
The trail was much better. I know in 1984, I pretty much got lost, I think, every day, you know. For
Iditarod or Quest?
Yeah, on the Iditarod. You know, you only see, you know, six markers a day. And now you see...
Is that because of Dina Osmar?
Maybe, you know, but, you know, the trail was there, you know, but it was... you know, in and out of the villages, there was multiple trails, and so
yeah.
It was really easy to get off on the wrong trail. And
still explain to people that the most easiest place to get lost in a race is around villages.
Right.
Because there's trails everywhere.
Yeah. You know, once you're a farther away from a village, there's just only one trail.
Yeah.
But then you get close to a village, and then there's little wood-cutting trails, and there's trap lines, and then each village has their own dog races, too. And they mark them.
Yeah.
You know, so you have to pay attention to the markers, you know.
And obviously the sleds have probably gotten a lot more high-tech, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the sleds are, well, you know, the traditional sleds are probably, you know, somewhat still as good, you know, the basket sleds. But the materials, the plastic, quick-change runners.
Tim White started all that?
Yeah. You know, my first sled had the screw-on runners. You know, it was one set of runners for the whole race. And I remember... I ended up switching sleds instead of switching runners.
I remember Randy talking about back in the day when his mom, Roxy Wright, you know, one of the finest female mushers, you know, won multiple races. They would have to mix all their dog food together. They couldn't go to the feed store and buy a big block of meat back in the day, you know. Everybody was creating their own dog food, too.
Yeah, no, I don't think the dog food was as good as it is now, you know. It's not as energy dense right now. It's packed full of energy right now.
And you have mushers training their dogs on, like, conveyor belts and hyperbaric chambers, and it's just, you wonder how far...
Yeah. And wearing clothes that you can now buy at Walmart back then. So those $50 parkas that you can buy at Walmart now is what you guys were wearing on the trail, isn't it?
Yeah, right. And I just was started during the Polypro thing. We had wool, a lot of fur... but there's guys that wore cotton too, jeans, and then the cotton long underwear, that kind of thing. It was that transition was right then.
You've been around for a while. The storms, are they really that much worse nowadays? Or you guys probably had some. I know the legendary one with Dick Mackey was in that Timberland commercial. I mean, were you guys probably had some pretty bad storms back then too?
Yeah, I don't think the storms are any worse or any better. You know, I think that's just a chance, you know, thing, really. You just got to be prepared for anything. And typically, as you're traveling, especially on the Iditarod or the Yukon Quest, you're going to go through different weather systems as you go.
And it's deceiving, especially coming this way to Fairbanks. You start in Whitehorse, and same with Iditarod. It's easy the first couple of days. It's like, oh, this weather's great.
Yeah.
You have no idea what's waiting for you.
Right. It can be balmy one day, and then next day it's just really cold. You know.
And here's one for you. You've been at 50 below in the Quest, I'm sure. I don't think interior mushers realize how tough the coast is. Not how tough, but the wind storms are outrageous, especially between like Shack and Koyuk or... up until a couple of years ago, you didn't see bad wind in the Quest, but it was pretty hairy 2 years ago in the Quest. And my biggest fear being in the cold is the wind. It's not the cold, because we can dress for that. And you know, we have perfectly good coats nowadays. Our dog jackets are $60 now each. But I worry about the wind more than anything out there.
Yeah, no, the wind is probably the thing you have to really pay attention to for sure.
But you know what Sonny told me in the quest a couple of years ago? He prefers to camp in the wind. He thinks his dogs sleep better.
Well, they certainly dig in.
They dig in and cover up if they can.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So we're talking to Iditarod and Yukon Quest legend here in his own home, Dave Shear. Ran in 84 and 96. When was the other one?
I see, 84, 86, and 96.
And what about the Quest? What years
I finished the Quest in 89 and 91.
What was the big difference back then between the races?
Well, when I ran the Quest, there was, I think, six checkpoints. It was 300 miles between CarMax and Dawson with no checkpoints. And nowadays, they've broken that up.
Yeah.
That was the Quest. It was 300 miles with no resupply.
You know, it's tough to say to these people, the local folks, we want to try doing the race the way it was done back in the day, because we want to involve all these villages along the way. But it would be really neat one year to do it. Like, you know, Frank Turner's always telling me what it used to be like. And it's pretty amazing. It's when you really learn what you're about when you're out there. That's why I love the Quest, because you're out there for days on end. I mean, last time I came this way, I didn't see another mushroom for over a week. And
wow.
It's fun being out there with just you and the dogs.
Yeah. On the Quest, we built more fires. I remember that, you know, back
yeah.
in the day. So I don't know if they do that anymore, but...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's so. Usually if you got a fire going and there's a mushroom coming up the trail, they, for some reason they like to stop and say, hey, can I join you?
Yeah.
So, Dave, you're now living the retired life. You're a realtor here in the Natsu Valley. But you still have your foot a little bit in mushing. I know that you help out your buddy Hugh here a little bit. You helped me find my place up in Willow. You still have your foot a little bit in the mushing scene. What do you think about it these days? Here we are, 2012, 2013. What do you think the status is of mushing in the years to come?
Oh, I think there's a lot of opportunity. You know, it's a great sport, and it's Alaska's state sport for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And I look forward to participating as I can, you know, helping Hugh and whoever else I can help along, and enjoy keeping an eye on it. It's probably the only reason I read the newspaper in the winter is to catch up on
the races, huh?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
Well, again, thanks for your hospitality here. I know you've helped me out on a few occasions. You helped me out with my sled this year, and awesome dude, Dave Shear. I even have a couple of your old lines in some of my new dogs. So I can see some of that respect is still out there for the old-timers like yourself. So thanks for being on Hugh's show. I know that you had to get ready. It took you a while to get here. I think you thought you were going to be on video instead of radio.
What's an old-timer? Isn't that like a knife or something?
Yeah,
I think so, yeah.
I said that once about Dick Mackey to Joanne Potts, you know, who runs the Iditarod. She goes, you better not say that about Dick Mackey. I don't think he'd like that.
So Hugh, we have about 7 minutes left. Do you have any more questions for Dave? And if not, what's coming up?
Bad snow conditions this year down here. What's your advice for newer mushers about training dogs? My philosophy is I think that I hear from people who say they're running their dogs around in circles to get more miles on them. I don't think a lot of humans give their dogs enough respect for how smart they are, and I think the dog knows the whole time which trail goes back to the kennel. I'm a big believer in training dogs to bond with each other as much as you and the dog. I want my team to bond. Well, I spend a lot of time in the yard getting these dogs to bond. I think there's maybe an overabundance of people trying to put miles on dogs compared to training the dogs.
What's your take on that, Dave?
Well, you can break it into two parts. You got conditioning, and then you got training. So, and in terms of conditioning, right now, I think everybody's transitioning from four wheelers to sleds as the snow gets deeper. I know the farther north you go, there's more snow in Willow. There's barely enough snow, I imagine, but it's still a little early. But it looks like we're on course for a good snow year. But yeah, no, you're right, Hugh. The training is important. You know, for checkpoint protocol, and you have to socialize the dogs so that they're used to what's going on in the checkpoints and other dog teams.
Yeah. These newer mushers just got to do races. Like, you're signing up for a bunch, Robert. Just get out there, embarrass yourself, whatever. People want to do the little mushroom gossip. Believe me, not too many mushers have been gossiped as much as I have.
I've had my fair share, believe me.
Yeah, just let it go out the other ear, man, because that's the way those people are going to be about anybody. That's just, you know, if you're going to pay attention to them, then you're wasting your time that you could be concentrating on your dogs.
You know, Dave, since we have your ear here, I ask the mushers on Mushing Radio all the time that we host in at a studio in Palmer. I ask every one of those guys we've had on, you know, Mackey and Swinson, or Swinson and all those guys in the last couple of months. I always ask the question, because a lot of folks listen to this show as well as that show that maybe down in the lower 48 that have just a couple of dogs. And, you know, they're trying to get into mushing, and, you know, they don't know what they're going to do, whether they're going to come up here to do Iditarod or Yukon Quest or just do a couple of fun runs in the backyard. What would you tell those guys? What's your one piece of advice to those really novice guys that just really enjoy mushing? What would you say to them, Dave? One piece of advice.
Let's see. I guess if you're training for a race or any kind of a trip, you want to train your dogs so that the race seems easy.
Charlie Bolson.
You know, so you want to prepare them, you know, for what you expect them to do in terms of a race or a particular run that you're anticipating doing. So,
are you an advocate of training with more than one team, so you get two teams out there?
Oh, I always love that. Two teams.
Always makes a big yeah. Dogs get off on it too.
Two or three teams all the time. And we pass each other, and you know, standing, putting both teams side by side, so that they're uncomfortable with that.
First time I did that was going towards Yenta with Aaron Burmeister, a good buddy of mine. And he's like, wait. I was like freaked out. I couldn't figure out why he wanted me to, you know, be right next to him. I was worried. And he's like, no, let's have some coffee, you know. And that's what John Baker is known for, pulling out the thermos and giving his whoever he's traveling with some coffee and talking. My biggest advice would be two words to newer mushers: shut up. A lot of mushers think that by egging on the team and cheering them on, that they're the reason their dogs are doing so good. And these dogs, it's natural. It's what they do.
They'll tune it out eventually.
Yeah, and it's just not good. I mean, it's like I tell them, it's like your parent or your teacher yelling at you all the time.
Right.
It bums you out a little. And believe me, I've been there. That's why I whistle and hum a lot, just to try to calm myself down. And Mitch talks about it in his book, Mitch Seavey. When you're passing another team, don't be going, all right, come on. The dogs, you know.
They know better.
Yeah, if you want your dogs to listen, you should be able to say shh, and the whole dog ear should, you know, quiet down if you're bonded with them properly.
So there you have it, guys. Hugh is heading to Rapid City, South Dakota, Pine Ridge Reservation in the next few days, and then his Yukon Quest party on the 24th. Tell the folks one more time how they find out about that, Hugh.
They could just send me a message, laughingeyescal@hotmail.com, or else just through Facebook. Looking forward to seeing a lot of old friends and family. TopOfTheWorld350.com. We've got one opening still available. We're dedicating this race to Chief Isaac Junaby, and thanks to the Junaby family for all they've done. People of Eagle, Toke, and surrounding communities. It's an event, and we've already had three film crews coming, and lots of local support, and it's all about celebrating Alaska.
And to close the show, Dave, I know you're the go-to guy here in the Matsu Valley for some musher property. How do folks find out about you? Give a little plug for your business.
Okay. Well, I've got a couple of websites, but one website would be easy to find, and that's akareahomes.com. So, yeah, you plug into that website, and you can search for free, and I'll, you know, send me a message, and I'll help you find the right property.
What about a phone number or email as well?
My phone number, my cell phone number is 907-317-3676. And then my email is dsheer, that's spelled S-C-H-E-E-R, and it's at mtaonline.net.
So all of you folks down in the lower 48 that's dreaming about packing up that U-Haul and moving to Alaska,
smart move.
I did it myself. I moved up here with a U-Haul trailer, and here I am 3 years later almost. And Dave Shear's the guy. He can hook you up. He works for RE/MAX Realty, right?
Yep, RE/MAX Dynamic in the Valley.
There you go. Give Dave Shear a call if you're looking for that property. I'm sure he can help you out. Dave, it was my pleasure. I'm sure Hugh feels the same. Hugh, we'll talk to you next time. Maybe a show from the road. How's that?
Maybe from Soldier Fields. Who knows?
There you go. Hugh Neff, UConn Quest champion, and old school, not old man, Dave Shear. Coming to you from Gypsy Musher. We'll talk to you guys next time. Goodbye.